Hi, welcome to Talking Brains, a podcast about mental health, books, and what makes brains happy. I'm your host, Dr. Stephanie Sarkis. Today we're going to be talking to Danielle Bayer Jackson, who's a friendship coach and also a publicist. And she's done work in female friendships and what makes friendships work, what are the boundaries of friendships, how to know when a friendship might be toxic, and also where to go about meeting friends. I know I get asked that question a lot by clients and also my friends. Danielle's website is betterfemalefriendships.com. Enjoy the episode. Well, welcome to Talking Brains, Danielle. It's nice to have you as a guest.
It's so nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
And we met through our publisher. So we both are UF grads, and so we're both Gators, and we are writing books for Hatchet. And yours is coming out in 2024?
Early 2024. So it sounds like a long way away, but I know it'll be here like before I know it.
And tell everybody a little bit about your upcoming book and kind of what you specialize in and where people can find you.
Yeah. So I am a female friendship coach and educator, which normally has people either confused or they meet that with phrases like, oh, that's cute, you know, what age group do you work with? And it doesn't surprise me because friendship itself is, I heard somebody once describe the redheaded stepchild of the social sciences. So I understand that. And then also my thought is that, you know, female friendship specifically, unfortunately, a lot of times anything that's determined as like a feminine interest is seen as frivolous. So you put those two things together, female friendship, and it sounds like a fluffy thing. But there's just too much research that points to the importance of having friends for your mental, physical, emotional health. And it's just so much research, I can't ignore it. And so I thought, you know, I'm a former high school teacher and I'm in the educating space. And I thought I want to use my skills from the classroom to show people how to create and nurture friendships. Because, you know, research tells us that it's like the number one factor that determines how satisfied you feel with your life is quality relationships. And so the book that's coming out is tentatively titled Fighting for Our Friendships, The Art and Function of Conflict in Female Friendship. And I hope to highlight all the ways in which, you know, women come together and why we fall apart and what we can do to maybe add more richness and meaning to our friendships and to push through conflict. If it's healthy conflict and we feel like it's worth it, to equip us to know how to do that. And so I'm excited to be in this space, and a lot of women have said it's helpful, which is a blessing. And it's been a couple of years now, and I really appreciate and enjoy the work that I get to do.
And tell me a little bit about what would be healthy conflict versus unhealthy conflict in a friendship.
Yeah, so it's tough. I noticed that, you know, I'm using this language, like when I start talking about conflict and, you know, I'm making these videos in social media and people are like, why would I want to have conflict with my friend? And I realized, oh, let me backtrack. I understand some of us are bringing a certain attitude or image to the table. And so, yeah, I do need to differentiate. So as I see it, conflict just means, you know, as two individuals, I'm bringing to the table my personal interests, background, preferences, boundaries, desires. Naturally, at some point, they're going to clash with yours. Our job is to decide, is this functional to bringing us closer to meeting a need? It's an opportunity to solve a problem. There's obviously a problem here. Let's solve it. And does it function to bring us closer as a unit? Does it function to give us a shared understanding among one another? Healthy conflict. You can't avoid it. But unhealthy conflict works against coming together. It works against people's self-esteem. It works against solving a problem. So it can look something like, it could be explosive, like name calling and defensiveness and cursing people out, or it can be silent, like the silent treatment. That's not explosive, but it works against the objective of trying to create an understanding because I'm not communicating with you. And so whatever we're doing to work toward our objective of either connection or problem solving, healthy, anything that works against that and breaks down people's esteem in the process, unhealthy. And it's the healthy kind that is inevitable and the kind that research says actually surprisingly brings us closer once we do it together.
Ah, so when we have conflict and we get through that, actually bonds us more to someone.
Yeah, there's research that says, like,
Okay.
in a healthy conflict, which we can't escape when that happens and we work through it, that you'll actually feel closer to that person on the other side, which for some of us feels counterintuitive, but I've experienced it. I've talked to several women who've experienced it. It feels awkward and hard in the moment, but afterwards you do kind of look at each other like, oh my gosh, like we can get through anything.
I would think that really builds self-esteem too, and just self-concept, getting through something like that.
Yeah, definitely.
And does the way that you were kind of brought up, or the way that your parents handled conflict, does that have anything to do with how you handle conflict with friends?
Yeah, and I'm always quick to say, like, okay, well, I'm no therapist, but I'm learning as women sign up for different coaching sessions, they get to talking. Sometimes they'll speak to that explicitly. They'll say, like, I don't know, in my house, like we just, we're quiet for a long time, and then my mom will bring me dinner, and I know we're over it, And I think that, for some cultures, that is how we agree to move forward. I cut fruit up for you, and that says I love you, and there's an understanding, and maybe that's sufficient for some people in some dynamics. Yeah, I'm noticing that if conflict was explosive in your house, so you learn to be quiet to make it go away, then maybe you repress when you're in a friendship and there's an obvious problem, you're gonna act like you don't see it. Or you're gonna act like, well, what can I do to earn a good status with her again? Which is not a healthy response. But then also, on the other side, aggressing maybe is also not helpful to go back and forth. Or for many women, relational aggression where it's quieter. So I'm gonna do little things like, exclude you from this gathering, or, make little sarcastic comments, or share something about your reputation, all those are unhealthy approaches, but yes, I would imagine that they come from, however conflict was handled in your home.
And for people that, let's say that the word conflict because of family issues is a triggering word, are there other words you sometimes recommend for clients to use instead of conflict? So I'm just thinking of
I've
the
been
clients I work with, sometimes they're like, no, conflict, that sounds like a fighting thing.
right. And even I'm so glad you said that, because even as I'm writing the book, I'm like, okay, I need to kind of use some different words, because even if I help define it and they're on board with the definition, still that word is like so deeply rooted. So sometimes I'll say, tension, or like a tense moment, or a moment of, a little clashing moment. I talked to one expert, she refers to it as a pinch, and sometimes a pinch turns into a crunch if you let it go on too long. So we use these different words to help us embrace the concept if that word conflict is too, triggering. Kind of all means the same thing, but I think it's helpful to kind of make it a little more palatable.
And what have surprised you most from working with women and friendships in your work?
I think I'm most surprised. I guess I know this intellectually, but I'm constantly reminded of how friendship is the great equalizer, because I will have a session with a 19-year-old who's in college, and she's like, this is awkward. I've never had to like make friends before, and I feel so yada yada yada. And then turn around and I'm talking to a very high achieving woman who owns her own business, and she is killing it in every other way. But there's something about like her personal private friendship. She feels like she can't get right. And so it's just so interesting to see how universal it is, really, and then how we struggle because we never were taught the skills, because it's assumed that of course you know how to make friends. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, is there a way that that could be taught, you think? Is there a different way to let people know how to build friendships than what we're currently doing?
Honestly, especially as a former high school teacher, I think it should be approached from an academic level for kids at a young age. I mean, but I think from the beginning, like when we're telling kids, even when they go to recess in elementary school, like there's a time carved out in the day to go make friends. And sometimes we'll explicitly say, all right, well, go play, go make friends. And I think it's just so we'll just go do it. What, how hard can it be? And so we never talk about how to do it right, and how to be intentional about it. And I don't think we really ever know that we need to until maybe after, for some of us, graduation, because it's been these social institutions have provided a backdrop for you, and they facilitated opportunities for you, so you don't even know you need it until you kind of hit the mid-20s, which is kind of around the youngest age young women start coming to me. And I think it coincides with research that reveals that 26, 25, 26 is the age at which our social network begins to shrink exponentially. for all the reasons you might suspect. Where you left college, some people have begun prioritizing career advancement. They're trying to establish family ties. So around that age, you kind of look around and you're like, wait, where do my people go? I don't know what to do to either rekindle those relationships or to find new people. So I'm trying to make it a normal conversation because currently the extent of the public dialogue of making friends is either you have friends or you don't. And if you don't, what's wrong with you?
So there's almost like a punishing critique of
sure.
when this is actually a normal phase of development into adulthood.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, definitely. And I think some gender stuff there too. I think with men, there's almost like this, you know, if you're the guy who wants to take the attitude of like, oh, I don't need anyone. I conquer all, like, oh, you're independent. And that's cool. For a woman, I almost wonder if we see friendship as almost like a status thing, like connections as status for us. Like, you don't want to be the woman who has no connections. And so I've seen women stay in friendships too long that are toxic because it's better than not having connections. So there's a lot of things we do to at least have some semblance of relationship, even if it's detrimental. But you know, it's important, but I think socially it's important for women.
So that saying of it's not what you know, it's who you know, that can actually be kind of damaging to people, that they will stay in friendships because of, I need to know this person for this part of my career, or this person knows these people. Is that kind of what you run into with women, that it's about the networking aspect too?
Yeah, I've definitely seen that among women who are in the business world. There's one young lady, we had a coaching session maybe a year and a half ago now, and she's really good at what she does. She's a really prominent coach. And even as we were talking, like, she was like, man, I realized that I don't have like personal connections. It always turns into business. And we were talking and I was like, what is that about? And she realized, like, gosh, I guess this is such a heavy part of my identity that even if I'm meeting somebody in a social sphere, I'm taking it back to work. I'm looking at her as a potential client. I'm coaching her through. I don't know. And I asked her, I said, well, what else do you have going on? Like, what else do you value? How else do you identify? Gosh, I don't know. You know, and so for some of us, like, just being a friend and there's no ulterior motive, as seeing this person as a an opportunity to advance socially or whatever it is, we don't even know. And I wonder how much of that is cultural too, like here in the West, you know. So it's just interesting to see how even the concept of friendship, I think we all think we know, but some of us don't know what it's like to have a person in our life and we don't want anything from them. We just want their companionship.
So it's changing that definition, that maybe it's just sharing space with someone that we enjoy.
Okay. Exactly.
And what would you recommend as ways for people to meet friends? Cause I have women meet with me and they say, you know, I want something like online dating, except for friendships.
Yeah.
Like, I want to just meet people that we have stuff in common. And people meet people online, you know, like on different forums, on Reddit groups and things. But what are some ways that you recommend that women meet people that they might have that kind of kinship with?
Yeah. So there's a couple different things. And first, I want to say that's like, hands down, the number one question is like, how do I make friends? But typically, it comes with some kind of qualifier. So it's, how do I make friends as a person with social anxiety? How do I make friends as a new mom or a newly divorced woman or a military spouse? So there's always some qualifier like, well, how do I do this for my particular situation? I hope that shows us that we'll always be making new friends. Because one mindset I run up against is people thinking, I mean, I just feel like it's too late for me. I'm 50, I'm 60. I think it's too late for me. And so we don't even engage. And that means you're signing up for what, 40 more years of not having connections because you think it's too late. So you're always going to be having to do it. So it helps to know kind of some ways and tools to figure that out. And so you have to use the ones that fit your lifestyle, your personality. But I can kind of rattle off a couple. The first is, I always say, start with who you already know, which is not revolutionary, but there's research that shows us that a lot of our friends serve another role in our life too. So they're probably also your hairstylist. They're also your cousin. They're also your coworker. So if that's the case, how do I leverage these findings for my real life? Oh, there's probably people who I already know who maybe I don't know well, but I've never entertained the idea of having them as a potential friend. What would it look like if you told yourself, Well, let me get curious about her. Like I see her every now and then, but I've always dismissed her as, too young or, too weird or not weird enough, And so we have people we already know, but I've dismissed for whatever reason. And I wonder what could blossom if we entertain them as a potential candidate. So that's my first thought. A second way is to use, online forums. I think there was a stigma around it the way there was at first with dating, but now I saw something like, I don't want to get it wrong. It was either like 20 or 30% of heterosexual couples they met online. So now it's kind of normal. Well, now friendship is kind of emerging as this thing of people intentionally saying, I'm going online or on this app to make friends. So for example, a popular one I know of is Bumble BFF. So it's originally like a dating app. Now they've added like a section for making friends. And so going online, it doesn't make you silly or desperate. It makes you resourceful. Why would you not use the space you're always on to find women who are just like you? A couple things I say about doing that though. One, and this is all findings from these friendship apps have done like internal like questionnaires and data and things like that, and they've shared that data publicly. And so they find that there's a couple things to do to kind of optimize your friend making journey. The first is they say, fill out all aspects of your profile. I know sometimes you're like, I don't feel like putting in like what I like. Do that. Okay. The algorithm favors that. Also, being positive, believe it or not, that it favors people who use positive language. So I'm going to say, I think I'd like other women who enjoy these things as opposed to like, oh, I can't stand this and I don't want anybody who does this. Well, what do you like? So there are ways to kind of optimize online friend finding. Another is to find what I call a super connector. So these are people who like to bring people together. I'd consider myself one. So like, oh my God, Stephanie, you should meet my friend Marissa. Oh my gosh, find people to be extroverted and spirited in that way, and to make your desire known, to text them or call them and say, like, hey, I'm trying to get a little more plugged in, and I thought of you because you're always on the go, you're always out and about. And I was wondering, is there any way, like any place around here you feel like is worth checking out, or like anything? My subtext is, I'm looking for friends, but maybe it doesn't make me feel so self-conscious. So I just say, I'm trying to get plugged in. What do you think? So now I'm leveraging their knowledge and their network as opposed to limiting myself to what I know about what to do. Let me ask them. Most of them are eager to be like, oh my gosh, yeah, let me tell you. Or they'll surprise you by saying, oh my gosh, yeah, you should come with me to my book club next week. We meet every week. So many of us though are embarrassed to say, like, man, I kind of would like more friends. So we hold it inside. How do you expect to get a need met that you're going to hold inside because you're embarrassed? So that's like your very first act of vulnerability is to say it loud and proud. And then finally, a common strategy I give is to become a regular somewhere. A lot of us have these fantasies of these serendipitous moments of meeting someone. Like I'm in line at the coffee shop and this girl behind me, thinks I'm hilarious and laughs at my joke and we're best friends. And that definitely happens. But become a regular somewhere. That's why it worked in school, because you saw their face every freaking day. So how can I go to either a coffee shop regularly or walk my dog at the same dog park, generally at the same time, because the same people hang out there, or becoming a regular, because that breeds familiarity. And now I feel comfortable to say hello because I see you all the time. So those are some things to just kind of like, mix up in your little toolkit to see what feels good to you, to at least start getting you connected with some people. But I'll close by saying this. I know a lot of people are like, oh, I want these friendships. I don't have friendships yet. I always say friendships start with rapport, and rapport begins with hello. So just open yourself up to like connecting with somebody every day and then go from there.
And I want to know how you know that I have a crew at the dog park that I hang out with in the mornings and afternoons.
There you go. I know last time we talked, you mentioned coming from the dog
Oh
park.
yeah, there you go. Good memory. Yeah, because we can always talk about something. I think that's part of what people say to me is I really like your reframe of it's you're being resourceful. And sometimes people say to me, well, I don't really know what to talk about. And I think, well, just think of something common you're looking at, or ask somebody about their dog. How old's your dog? Because people always have something they want to share with you. But I really like that idea of a resourcefulness. I have had people tell me, well, I don't want to feel like a loser, like trying to make friends. And like you said, you know, if you look at it as, look at you going out there meeting people, how cool is that that you have the ability to do that? And what would you say for people that have social anxiety that kind of maybe monitor themselves while they're being social? Are there some tips you might have for them when they're going out and meeting new people?
Yeah, I've interviewed people who are experts in this space. And one thing Dr. Ellen Hendrickson shared with me, she encourages us to, and I know it's easier said than done, but to not focus on our performance and get curious about the person in front of you. So I know sometimes we're talking, we're thinking like, oh, am I talking too fast? Do I look dumb right now? Am I talking too loud? Or and instead, how can you like turn that spotlight off of you and onto them? Can you get curious about their tattoos, where they're coming from? Oh, their accent's interesting. Are they from somewhere else? Are they, you know, how'd you get here? Why do you like this place? You know, get curious about them. It also pairs well with our natural tendency to want to talk about ourselves, so they might enjoy you, you know, asking them questions. And then I think it also helps to arm yourself with these like findings from research. I know it always helps me to know I'm in good company. And there's something known as the liking gap. And what it suggests is that we tend to underestimate how much people like us in the first interaction, that we underestimate it by 50%. And so the way they discovered that was having participants meet and then rank each other afterwards and seeing the discrepancy between the ratings of how you think this person enjoyed you and how much they actually enjoyed you. And so remembering you probably really are hard on yourself, the average person is thinking you did just fine, you know, and they might be relieved that you brought up, you know, a conversation because they were thinking it too, but you were the bold one. And so, you know, I know all of that's easier said than done. But the last thing I'll say is, you know, you have to get a little uncomfortable. And I'm starting to wonder if even that messaging is like controversial these days, because we're like, if it doesn't feel good, don't do it. Like you need to like, if it doesn't feel good. And I understand that to some extent. But Dr. Carol Robbins, who I interviewed and her book is called Connect, she's a connection expert. She says just 5%, just like 5% out of your comfort zone. So I know when we think about getting social, we're not saying like jump in the pool of going to a huge party. We're saying like the next time you're in the elevator with that one person, just saying like, you know, how are you doing today? Or like, oh my gosh, I love your shoes. I've been looking for the same pair. You know, just that's a dip in the pool. It's uncomfortable, but you have to know in your mind, I think long term this will be good for me. I know it doesn't feel good right now, but I think this will be good for me, because I know some people with social anxiety, I've noticed with social media right now, especially TikTok. I'm on TikTok. I love it. Okay. But I noticed that like people get on there and they're like commenting on videos about social anxiety. And then there's comments and it's like almost like this loop. Like, yeah, I'm anxious too. Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's so hard being anxious. Yeah, I know. And at some point, I have to get away from all the people who are validating how hard it is, and like, oh my gosh, yeah, I hate going out. Yeah, me too. And give my brain an experience to show myself I can do it. At some point, I have to go outside and just like maybe talk to that Target cashier just like 1 minute longer than I normally would to show my brain, wait a second, I can do this, instead of isolating and ruminating on how much I can't do this.
So it's like training a muscle, sort of being
Exactly that.
social. Okay, so would you say like maybe talk to a new person each day is a good target for someone? That would that be a 5% kind of out of your comfort zone, or does it depend on the person?
Yeah, it
Or
can be a new person. It can be somebody who you do know. If you want to start with like, hey, I get socially anxious, but I'm going to start with somebody who I already know, but maybe talk to them 1 minute longer, or talk to them in a different environment, or maybe I'm going to talk to somebody I know and somebody I don't know, like maybe we go out as a group or they bring a friend. But you know, getting comfortable with like carrying conversations, even in body language. Sometimes we betray ourselves, you know, because we're trying to be cool, but you know, we're hunched over, we're not making eye contact. We scroll on the phone during moments of silence because we don't want to think about what to say next. So we have to think about how is our body language even betraying us? How can I get settled in my body? And then also I found that, you know, it helps sometimes to have what I call bookends for those who are really like awkward about conversation. And that's, you know, having your go-to opener and then a go-to closer. I've noticed that a lot of people are anxious because they don't know how to leave. So you're still kind of like talking. And I read the study in Psychology Today a couple months back that said they found that the average person would like the conversation to have ended earlier than it did, that we're like, we prefer to be done already, and not in a rude way, but just, you know, we're trying to be polite, so we stay. And but we would have been fine with it closing up like 5 minutes ago. And so it's okay to have a closer of like, okay, well, gosh, thank you for chatting so much with me, this was fun, I'm gonna circle around, but enjoy the rest of the event. Like, you can bring it to a close, you don't have to wait for somebody else. And so I think it even helps give us confidence to know, I can, wait a second, I have the power to start and stop a conversation when I want. That way it feels less like I'm going in here, but I don't know what's going to happen, I don't know how long, I don't know. It gives you a little control. You can leave whenever you're over it, you know, and confidently walk away. And that was a nice exchange. It doesn't have to turn into your best friend.
And I'm probably going to put you on the spot, but I'm going to do it anyway. What's an example of a good opener and then a good closer?
I'm so glad you asked. That's not on the spot. And so I have a framework. I'm laughing because people are like, it sounds so simple, but it helps sometimes to have tangibles for the things that that you feel like, gosh, I should know. But no, it's it helps to have, you know, a couple tricks. And so I call it, you know, my SEEK method, S-E-E-Q, seeking opportunities to start a conversation, SEEK. So very, very short, concise explanation. The S stands for, you know, a smile, prompt a smile through a compliment. Doesn't sound revolutionary, but when I polled more than 200 women and I asked them, how do you start a conversation? 94% of the women said a compliment. So it's working. There's research that shows we tend to be reluctant to do it though, because we overestimate how awkward we'll make the other person feel, and we underestimate how awkward we'll feel, and we underestimate how much they'll appreciate it. And so, I mean, something simple, but it's like a go-to. Oh my gosh, your dog's so cute. Oh my gosh, your dog's so well-behaved. How did you get, okay, a compliment. A compliment, it feels good. Easy. The first E in SEEK stands for everyday small talk. I know we don't like it. I know people roll their eyes, but it has a purpose. Small talk leads to big talk. I can't just see you on the street and be like, hey, so tell me about your relationship with your father. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to start by opening with something super safe. The trick to small talk I found is to jump out of it as soon as possible. So maybe I'll talk to you about the weather, but I'm not going to do that for 30 minutes. But maybe I'll comment on the fact that it's obviously raining, and then just say like, yeah, you know, it sucked to have to drive in the rain. I'm driving all the way from, you know, Tampa. All right, what side are you on? Oh, okay, I wanted to live out there. Are you and your family out there? Okay, so it leads to big talk, but of course I'm going to come in with something appropriate and safe. Okay, the next what'd you say?
So it's like ramping up.
Okay. Exactly. Because I know there's a bunch of jokes on TikTok of people like, oh my gosh, if I want somebody I can just talk about my trauma with, and I don't have to. And I'm like, I get it, you know. But one consequence of leading with the big stuff is you actually create a sense of suspicion in the other person, because I'm going to think, I'm going to question your judgment. I'm sorry. I'm going to think like, okay, I don't even know you like that, and you're telling me about something relatively personal. So, okay, you look off your rocker, bring it down. Okay. The second E stands for everyday observations. So literally commenting, or environmental observations, literally commenting on anything you see. I mean, literally anything. So let's say I go to a museum, right? And there's a person who's kind of next to me, and we're both looking at exhibits next to each other. I might just kind of say out loud, kind of to myself, but so she can hear, I might say like, oh my gosh, this is beautiful. Like, this is so beautiful, isn't it? That's it. And she's either going to say, I know. That's it. Or she's not going to respond, and I look like I'm talking to myself, and then I just look like a very confident woman. Okay. But just commenting on anything. And then if you're like, I don't even know how to start doing that, I encourage you, use your five senses. So the way something tastes, if I'm like waiting in line for ice cream, the way something tastes, the way something smells, if it's too cold in here, like, oh God, it's freezing in here. Is it just me? Okay. I thought it was just me. That's it. I mean, it just gets it started. And then also, if you say something kind of conspiratorially, I've noticed that makes you feel like friends too. So even if I'm saying it to you, like in a hushed whisper, like, okay, is it just me, or is it like kind of cold? Is it just me? Okay. I mean, like, we already feel like we're in, like saying, I like to say things like they're gossip, but they're not, but it just, it's something you do with somebody you're familiar with.
Right. And it's not a diss to anybody. It's just like, wow, you know, Muffin's really active. Like, we do that at the dog park.
There you go. Works like a charm. And then the last one, Q, just stands for a question. I mean, asking a question about anything, people want, they like feeling helpful. It feels good. So if I'm going to an event and, it's kind of awkward because I'm in there and, I don't know anyone. They don't know me. I might just kind of like walk over to someone and acknowledge it's random and say, okay, this is random, but did you park in the front lot or the back lot? Okay, good. I just want to make sure I'm not going to get towed. That's it. But it gets it going. I don't know what that might lead to, but I know that it's somebody's got to start it. So, if you're in class, sometimes when I work with young people, literally, hey, do you bar can I borrow a pen? Or like, hey, do you know if she's assigned homework yet? I mean, literally anything. But if anything, if I know sometimes people are like, ah, but what if I get rejected? What if they? I like to say, yes, that's possible. Like, let's lean into it. Yes, it's possible that someone rolls their eyes and walks away. It is not very likely. Like the average person is not acting like they didn't hear you rolling their eyes and saying, you're disgusting and walking away. The average person's not doing that. So that's the first thing is that, yeah, it's possible, but it's a part of a friend-making journey. And then the other thing I want to say about people who are so fearful of being rejected is that this is for you too. It's not just you walking around and hoping you can impress others. You're looking for people who fit well with you. So if you do respond, reach out to somebody. And they respond kind of cold or standoffish. Don't internalize it like, oh God, what's wrong with me? Instead, it's like, okay, well, you know what? She's obviously not a good conversation partner. And I need people who can like hold a conversation. So that's good data for you too of where to invest your time. So kind of take your power back in that way too.
So if someone doesn't respond the way that you would like, it doesn't mean that you did anything wrong.
Right. But since some of us go into these interactions feeling self-conscious or scared that we'll be exposed, then you're taking it as evidence that she saw what you've been trying to hide. She sees that I'm desperate. She sees that I'm weird. She just saw it. I've been exposed. Instead of like, okay, well, I don't know what her problem is, but I'll move on, which takes
So
some,
it's
self-confidence, sure.
Right. And it sounds like it takes time to just to like, exercise that muscle. So kind of give ourselves credit when we do kind of go out on a limb and go outside that comfort zone.
Exactly.
And tell me a little bit about friendship coaching. What are some ways that you help women kind of connect and feel more comfortable with making friendships and just talking about friendship in that space? What are some ways that coaching helps?
I always joke because I know that there's kind of like a little beef between like mental health professionals and coaches, and rightfully so, because I know that there's a lot of coaches who are out here doing too much. Like that is not in your lane. So I understand. But one way that I found it to be helpful to operate in this space is I do focus very much on, okay, where are you now? What's the goal? Okay, now let's co-create some strategies to get there. If you're noticing that, like, well, I think I have other issues that kind of color my approach. Abandonment issues with my mom. I've been in emotionally abusive friendships before, so I have trust issues. I think having supplementary support is like a great winning team to have. I've had therapists that coach, and several women I work with have a therapist. And my favorite thing is when they have a moment and they're like, oh my gosh, wait a second, my therapist said that, so maybe I should do this. So it helps to inform our sessions. With the friendship coach, we could talk about anything from, tangible strategies of how to make friends in a new city. We can talk about preparing for a hard conversation. I just had a girl emailed me and it was like subject line, urgent. And she said, I see that you don't have availability, but I'm seeing this friend this weekend and she's so toxic. And I think I have to be done, but I have to end it. Like I have to end it this weekend. And so we walked through, what does that look like? How do you get yourself emotionally and mentally prepared for the outcomes? What are you going to say? How are you going to follow up? So we went through all of that. What's your social media strategy? Are we blocking her? Are we not? I mean, which I'll be honest, I used to see as petty, but now I see as a very real part of friendships is
Oh, the
social media.
blocking.
Yeah, blocking, muting, so we can prepare for hard conversations, or we can talk about how to release a friendship with grace, or even get over getting ghosted by a friend and you thought everything was fine and you want to figure out like I need to get over this, but I can't stop ruminating. So really anything in your life at the intersection of friendship, we can talk about if you're ready to do something about it. I mean, you can use up all our session time just like venting and I will validate. I got you. But it helps if you're ready to figure out something to move on. I can totally help with that.
So have maybe an end goal in mind. Like I would like to have more friends. I would like to deepen my friendships.
It's the
Something
first
along those
question I
lines.
ask to keep to let them know from the beginning. I start by saying, you know, we're here today for 75 minutes. By the time we're done, what would you like to have figured out? Are we trying to get clarity on something you've been ruminating about? Do you want tangible strategies for something? So I make them tell me up front. Now, sometimes as we get going, we realize, oh, the objective changes because we like something else comes up, but forcing them to define from the beginning so we know we're not just going to be here all day talking about our feelings, which I like to do, but I want you to feel like, oh, that's exactly what I needed. I got what I need to feel comfortable moving forward.
So there's the experience and then the doing piece and then to get to the goal, it sounds like
yeah.
What's the action that's gonna take place?
Right.
So and tell me where people can find you and tell me the name of your book again.
Yeah. So everything lives on betterfemalefriendships.com. I do have men, maybe one man every week, email me privately, like, do you work with guys? And we can figure that out. But betterfemalefriendships.com. My podcast is called the Friend Forward Podcast. And the book is titled Fighting for Our Friendships. And hopefully it's out in early 2024.
Well, thank you so much, Danielle. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you again to Danielle Bayard Jackson at betterfemalefriendships.com for that really enlightening view of female friendships. And again, that's betterfemalefriendships.com. And I'm Dr. Stephanie Sarkis at stephaniesarkis.com. And if you could hit that subscribe button and give us a 5-star rating, it would be appreciated. Thank you.